You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by Nicole Hale and Chris McFeely.
What's up?
Chris Triplett's taking the week off. I'm semi-sick, so I'm going to be drinking peppermint tea throughout the thrust of this show. So, cheers to that. It is Fanboy Versus the long month at the end of the year, as we have faced yet again a five-week month and found ourselves short of comics, in particular, New 52.
Mm-hmm.
Not a damn one this week. So I was very happy. I went into my shop, and they were actually having 20% off trades. That has been his method for dealing with the five-week month. So I picked up the first six issues in trade of Avengers Academy. So
I'm approved.
Checking up on that. There's another reason that you may want to get caught up on Avengers Academy that we found out a bit about this week. We'll talk about in the news, which we might as well do now. So Chris, what's up with Academy?
Yeah, turns out, I guess spoilers, but not really, sort of. Turns out Stryker's gay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this.
It got Axel Alonso, Marvel's editor in chief, just said it in passing in an interview on, I believe, it was Comic Book Resources, and everybody was like, blah, blah, blah. it almost feels like he probably wasn't supposed to say it. But he said it, and they didn't try to put the genie back in the bottle or anything. So Christoph Gage did an interview with CBR about Stryker, and we saw some preview pages from the next issue. And that's a thing that's happening. So that's good. It's I approve of that. Yeah,
so,
I mean, there's thorny ground to tread over. Because have you read that volume you have yet there?
I skimmed over most of it, and I read the most of the Stryker-centric issue that's in that.
Yes, because there's some thorny ground there concerning his childhood and activation of his powers, and that could go off in a very bad direction, but based on the preview pages, it's been very considered, and in fact, that's part of illustrating why he's actually completely normal.
Yeah, I mean, even, in Chris's, part of what he said was that this has been, like, the plan for the character pretty much all along. So it's not like, we get concerned when these things come out and that they're, shoehorning it in. And I guess some of the preview page shows him talking to Lightspeed. And, you get the feeling that they're starting to shoehorn in, a lesbian characteristic for her.
Oh, that's not shoehorned. I mean, that goes back to...
Well, but it's not... I guess it's one of those
obviously it wasn't when she was originally conceived, because she was originally conceived as a 9-year-old.
As a 9-year-old, so but, right.
Yeah. So it was Runaways, like, years and years ago.
Right.
And feeding up then through the Loners miniseries that she starred in with the other characters. They were a team, a superhero self-help group called Excelsior that debuted in the first arc of the second volume of Runaways, if I have my memories correct. So that's a good 5 or 6 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And then they went on to have a miniseries of their own called Loners. And they made some vague allusions toward it there. Like maybe she was lesbian, maybe she was bisexual. So this seems to be great, just bringing that into the fold as well and using it as a springboard.
But the indication is that that's been true for Stryker for a while. And one of the things that he does mention is, of course, in that Stryker issue, and I just read it, there's a scene in that issue where I guess he's at the gym, and he asks Finesse if she wants to have sex with him or whatever, and she turns him down pretty cold, and then he turns around and asks Vale as well. And then later, Vale sort of feels rejected by Justice, and she comes and basically says, well, hey, do you want to do it now? And he's like, I'm tired. Let's talk instead.
Mm. And definitely the hints are there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In particular,
he obnoxiously, and it's a thing of Strikers that he's an obnoxious, loud guy who hits on everything that walks by, but it's like he does it in deliberately the most obnoxious way so that they won't take him on, but he appears to the other guys to be a manly man.
Right.
It's very, very clever.
I did, once I found those bits again with the abuse in his childhood, that it does...
Yeah, so for the listeners who haven't read it, Stryker was abused by his man. Stryker's mother is one of those gold-digging glory hounds who wants to live vicariously through her child, and he was a child actor, if I recall right, something like that, at commercials or whatever it was, and he was, I believe the touched inappropriately was the carefully chosen phrase to describe it. And that's when his powers kicked in and he killed the guy. So it wasn't an ongoing thing or something. There was one thing that happened and his powers kicked in and the guy died as a consequence. And Stryker is afraid that made him gay. You know, and obviously there's the potential for that to go off in a wrong direction if it wasn't being written by a less talented writer, but it's being used as a springboard to say, look, you would have turned out that way even if that happened. One thing can't make you turn gay. In fact, that probably held you back from accepting that part of yourself for that much longer. You know, real good, solid, well-considered stuff.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm interested to see in that direction that's going to
just another feather in the book's cap.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Did we miss it that Bunker debuted last week?
Well, we probably tried to ignore it.
Okay.
Fabulous!
We didn't really talk about it. I hadn't heard much, but I thought we'd mention that anyway. So, other news.
Not Teen Titans for introducing a gay character.
Right.
Whatever, but Mexican Latin man who dressed in purple with all the frills and the sunglasses.
Yeah. Why did I mention that?
Alan's homosexual character, you know, just a little comparison.
I'll mention this little bit of news. I know because we were going to talk about it as well. But several years ago, this is how long Superman movies have been in production hell and stuff. This was pre Superman Returns. Nicolas Cage was attached to a Superman movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he apparently, as a part of that and research for it, decided he would get his hands on a Action Comics issue 1. And apparently...
You've seen pictures of him in costume, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, lots and lots.
So apparently he's been hanging on to it all this time. And just this week, he finally decided... I guess he didn't decide to sell it, but it went to auction this week and sold for $2 million.
Crazy.
Which makes it officially the highest selling price for a comic ever.
I mean, it makes you wonder if its price was increased because Nicolas Cage was known to have touched it or something.
I mean, there is that possibility.
Or would it have sold for more if he hadn't?
Yeah, did that depreciate the value? Or increase, never know.
But was it just because of being attached to the film that he bought it?
I think so.
Because I thought he was a huge Superman fan anyway. I mean, he's been hankering to play it.
I don't know. I, to be honest, that's the way I heard the story from NPR. So, and Chris is frozen, and I bet we lost him for a second.
Oh, no, Chris.
Oh, no, you guys. So we'll call time.
Would you like to buy a comic book for that amount of money?
Right. No, I mean, I can't imagine.
I love my comic books, but come on, get a reprint.
that comes down to the different kinds of, you know, comic and comic collecting that there is. I mean, on one side of the fence, you know, you have people that purely enjoy it as a as a literary medium, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. that it's all about actually reading the comic, that it's about, you know, enjoying the story and all of those things. But, you know, for some people, there is that collector's aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And
I haven't got into that.
I just, yeah, that's, I mean, it's not for me right now. I just don't have the money to be that way. And that's not to say I don't, like, keep all of my comics and take care of them and all of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is, you know, in a sense where, as I try to save this for a second, but, you know, there is an aspect where I can see the market for that. You know, I can mm-hmm. see that, you know, people would do that. And like I said, I take care of my comics. You know, I try to keep them in good shape and everything. So, you know, so I can see the allure, I guess, of that. But man, I just don't, for something that I'm never going to touch, because yeah, you couldn't even touch it. You just look at it. You know?
It was just like, you remember that Simpsons where they bought the first, what was it? Atom Man. What was it? And then they was like turning the pages with like tweezers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's totally that kind of thing. Like you've got to put on the special gloves and.
Yeah. No, that doesn't sound like fun to me.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, no. Looks like Trax has joined us.
I still think that he sold the big is because Nicolas Cage needed money. If you guys don't know, Nicolas Cage is notorious for spending more than he earns. So.
Well. Excuse me. And I mean, like I said, I think some of it too is just comes down to that, you know, he just didn't, you know, the part didn't come through. Like I said, I don't, my information on that came from NPR. So, and they had just put two and two together, the reason he had it, but they didn't really mention why he sold it. So is Chris McFeely back with us?
Well, he posted in the chat.
Yeah.
Yes,
he's back. You missed all of them. So
what did I miss?
Nothing. We were
going on.
We were basically killing air. So, but yeah. Basically, yeah. Just saying, like, I mean, I had heard from NPR that he, you know, had it because of the Superman role. So I don't know.
Well, I think his son is named Jor-El, isn't he?
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me.
So that's a big, but I mean, well, did he only name him it because he was once attached to Superman?
Yeah, I mean,
he was a pretty huge Superman fan anyway.
Probably so. I mean, that happens to people.
Well, let's crack on before I disappear again.
Okay, so let's talk about the thing that everybody's talking about, Watchmen 2 or point one or whatever.
They're calling it, well, Watchmen 2 is just the name that they're sort of throwing around. It's probably not what it's going to be called or anything.
No.
Because it's not a sequel to Watchmen. No, first of all, none of this is confirmed at all. This is really just rumors out of Bleeding Cool. But confirmed from various anonymous sources suggest that some kind of Watchmen prequel miniseries focusing on characters or pairs of characters will be coming down the line at some time in the future. Names attached into Darwin Cook talking about a comedian miniseries and reportedly a Night Owl series with Hollis Mason and D'Andre Berg. Drawn by Andy Kubert and Joe Kubert. So that's, you know, a sort of the father and son thing. And there's been word of some involvement from Dave Gibbons, but potentially just like a Bleeding Cool describes it as a passive acquiescence.
I mean, I don't want to.
So yeah,
I don't want to sound snobby, but it's kind of like I think the beauty of Watchmen is that it's 12 issues that gives you everything that you need. You know?
Oh, certainly.
I mean, it you know, it doesn't. It's not all linear, which I think is part of the beauty of it as well. But it's 12 issues that gives you everything that you need. And I don't see the value in dipping back into that world.
Monetary value.
Other than monetary.
That's the only value.
I don't see an artistic or,
it's
you know,
not as if there aren't years and years of room in the Watchmen story to tell tales where they'll fit in and without obstruction, but really contrary to the point of Watchmen.
That kind of I think that's what I'm saying. It's like the point of Watchmen was to be sort of like this self. I mean, it certainly wasn't Alan Moore's original vision, because I mean he was totally trying to steal characters from Charlton and ended up just having to make generic characters.
Well,
but I think that made it
their way. It's like either way, it's still a story about the deconstruction of the superheroes in a Cold War era. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why I say I think the fact that those characters exist in a self-contained universe, I think, lent it more power than maybe he even realized it did, because they weren't pre-existing characters that we knew anything about. You know, these were new characters that were created for this. All of the blanks that needed to be filled in were. And, you know, you get a nice contained 12-issue story. Other than fanfic stuff, I'm not sure what else you could really, you know, fill in.
Just past adventures. Wasn't the Watchmen movie tie-in video game a prequel?
I think so. I think it was supposed to be. I own it, and I will tell you that I have never loaded it up. I bought it because it was the same price. The deal that I got was the same price for the Blu-ray with the game as just the Blu-ray. What the hell, I'll just get the game, and I have never loaded it up.
Definitely some high-quality creators being reported as being involved, so they're not scraping the bottom of the barrel for people to work on this, but...
No, but...
It feels wrong-headed anyway.
Exactly. It just feels like a money move to me, and that's just... Mm.
It seems like they're. Well, I guess that there's never a right time for it.
No.
But there's never a wrong time for it either, in the sense that Watchmen is timeless.
Yeah.
But you feel like if they were going to do it, they should have done it when the film was out.
They've totally missed the boat. I mean, you know, and the film didn't even do that well. So it's not like it has a lot of public appeal. I mean, Watchmen really only has comic appeal anyway, which I'm fine with. I mean, to me, it's a work of comic, and I think that. I mean, even people that I know that don't really read a lot of comics, including my wife, read the comic and really enjoyed it. So, you know, it has value outside of that.
Oh, as a retailer, like, I've seen people who read the comic and loved it, read the comic and hated it, never read the comic and loved it, never saw the comic and hated it. You know, that's spanned the gamut.
I like the never read the comic and hated it. That's or never read the comic and loved it. That's the... It's true, but funny. So I don't know. I think Gail Simone's jokes I thought were great when she was talking about...
Yes.
She was talking about doing like a little...
She's writing Little Watchmen.
Little Watchmen.
Rorschach is just known as Blotchy.
Oh, God. Now that I would read.
Watchman Babies in V for Vacation.
There's a great video. I think you can get it on YouTube as well if you haven't seen it, which I'm sure most people have.
Saturday Morning Watchman.
Which is the Saturday Morning Watchman, which is hilarious.
It's so good because it's so believable.
Oh, I know. It's not only that, but it's just like perfect. Like to the stuff that's in the, you know, that's in the comic. It's just like, oh, that's really twisted
like
and true.
A rock band and comedians are biggest favorite, and he's the typical like Leviscus character that was in every 1980s cartoon.
Oh my gosh.
Every trope of 1980s cartoon television is in that 1 minute.
Oh my God, it is so great. So anyway,
what are you gonna do, Adrian? We're going to call the Watchmen.
Oh my God, I have to pull that out and watch it again. Just I haven't seen it in a few months. It's always worth it. So anyway, I don't know. We'll see. It's completely unconfirmed, so we don't know anything.
Yeah,
it's
probably going to happen. The bleeding cooler is when they have this level of it.
I'm wondering sometimes if, you know, the comic industry doesn't do like politicians do, because politicians will do this thing where they'll just like float a balloon, you know, they'll just like throw names out and just see like how the public reacts. You know, like to candidates and stuff.
Comic books will then just do it anyway, regardless of what the reaction is.
Well, but I wonder if sometimes they don't do that. Like, let's just throw a rumor out there that we're going to do a Watchmen and just see how people react, you know. And
let's see, you know, it's like with anything. It's like, let's see how much the internet hate this. Tremendously. Let's do it.
All right. Let's go for it. And we're going to claim to attach big name people, and then we're going to replace them with unknowns right at the end.
Woohoo!
It'll be fantastic. They like that? All right, cancel it.
And put J.T. Krull on it.
You like these comics? All right, we're going to cancel them. No, no. You hate them? They're going to keep going.
More room for Scott Lobdell.
Woohoo! we're on a roll today. So, all right, well, I guess we'll get to reviews then. I don't know, is there any other news?
Besides of it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other movie news or anything other than...
Well, there's this word about a Dark Knight prequel has been confirmed, which will be running in front of...
Oh, yeah, the Mission Impossible.
My Mission Impossible 3, yes, in select IMAX theaters.
I don't know what that...
The ones that are actually filmed on film and not digital.
Does prequel mean extended trailer?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
But not probably sure. Like a little coherent...
More coherent than a trailer.
Scenes, like, not a bunch of scenes.
I am not going to hold my breath that it's going to be more coherent. I'm just going to assume that it'll be connected at least.
Just wait 2 days and you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I thought I heard it was like 8 minutes long or something.
Really? That's
I thought I heard that. Hang on, I'll look it up while you show it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it's the...
I'm sorry, but I'm getting so sick of having to hear news about Dark Knight every week. It's like the movie's going to be ruined before we watch it.
Oh, I know. And there's no way it's going to live up to the hype. I mean,
no.
That was the beauty of The Dark Knight is that the first one was so, it was okay, you know. And so then the second one came out and it was amazing. And then Chris McFeely fell off the call.
Again? And oh, Chris!
So I have a quick fix for that. Yay.
No,
I do multiples of these.
I just think there's just way too much talk about it. It's like they're force-feeding you every bits of information, and then by the time it comes, be like, okay, wasn't as good as what I had in my head.
Yeah, well...
Kind of like, insert Transformer movie here, you know? You see all these great clips, and then you see the movie, you're like, oh,
wow,
well, what I had was a little bit better in my head.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, sometimes results may vary. Wow, now my side is acting up a bit, so come on.
Internet fail!
Work thing. We're so sorry for the tech issues this week.
Yeah.
And the host issues this week. I'm like, rah. Thing in my lungs. Well, anyway, I guess we'll get to reviews then.
Yeah, and, might as well start.
If I can get this thing to work. Possibly. Come on. There we go. That's what I wanted it to do. Yay. Okay. We'll go with that for a second. Okay.
It's just the two of us right now.
Just the two of us. Can make it if we try.
It looks weird because I'm not used to Skype looking like this.
I know, or it's like the full screen thing. It's a little creepy.
Yeah, so, it's like, hi, David.
Hi. Big face of me. That's what everybody wants. That's like a wake-up call in the morning. All right, so what you got?
Okay, well, I am going to review the one thing that I love more than anything this year in comic books, and that's the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 4. Da, da, da. Again, this comic has yet to fail me. Each month, it's better and better. You get the inside of what was going on at April O'Neil's lab that she works at, what they were experimenting with, and you come across that they're trying to build a super soldier. Hence why the Foot Clan wanted to get a hold of it as well. Because can you imagine super soldier ninjas? Oh.
I mean, I imagine them all the time. And yeah, it sounds great.
So let's just say there's a lot of people in trouble at her place because this got lost. but that's just the little side story. The main story is... Raph comes in contact with Old Hob. Old Hob is the cat that separated him from his brothers. He carried him off and was going to use him as food when Hob was a cat himself. Well, he got mixed up, and so he's mutant himself. So, but Raph, as well as the other three turtles, they are forgetting their past at the plant where or the lab laboratory sorry, speak, where they're at.
That's very laboratory, not lavatory. Those are two different things.
That's why you say laboratories.
Yes, there you go. Laboratory.
Laboratory.
So, what are you doing in my laboratory, Didi?
that was a great show.
Well, because Splinter was so more advanced, he remembers what was going on there, and so he's trying to retrain the three that he has to train their mind to get these memories back. Well, old Hob, he has a different way. He's like, I'm going to beat the memories out of you, because he's like, I'm going to teach you how, you know, because he lost his eye. He's like, I'm going to teach you what happened to me. And so guess what? It works. Raph, he gets, well, him and Casey get their butts pretty much whooped by old Hob's gang, and it's working. Raph remembers who he was and what's going on, but like I said, even though they're two great, you know, soldiers or warriors, they can't take on a whole gang themselves. But boom, 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 guess who finds them? Yes, yay, the other three turtles find Raph and they're reunited, so yay. And let's just say there's a lot of ass kicking. Old Hob gets a few stars in the arm, which is kind of nasty. Yeah, ninja stars. And, so he runs off, and the turtles are all reunited. And let me just tell you, the very last page of this made me want to cry. Nope. Yeah, because they introduce Raph back to Splinter. And it's just the sweetest thing to see Splinter just light up with all this emotion. And it's a really cute group hug at the end. It's like, oh my gosh, this is so sweet. They're all together again. So yes, it's very, very awesome. I love this. I like I said, it's probably my favorite comic book this year. I'm loving it. I love each and every one. It's 32 pages, and it's very well worth the $4 I put out for it each month.
$4?
Mm-hmm.
Man.
I know. It's
I'd
worth
try
it.
Try and get that in trade if they are able to publish it over here now after the investigation.
Yeah, the last one in this series story is going to be next month, so the trade should be out for that. Because it's a five-parter starter series, so. And yeah.
Oh, is it only a 5-issue miniseries? Or
No. It's just the first.
Just a five-part arc, okay.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but no, they're going to be continuing in this, and like I said, it's awesome. I love it, and I will buy the trade with it as well. So
that's good.
Yeah,
nice.
So, like I said, I about cried at the end. I'm like, I should be crying at comics. My gosh!
Oh, I'm crying. I cry reading comics all the time. It's
but the ending was just nice. It was just so sweet. And, of course, you get to see how Raph gets kind of confused. He's like, wait. You know, and of course Casey's confused. He thinks he got hit too hard. He's like, I'm seeing four of you now. So yeah, it's really good. If you're a fan of the Turtles, this is a must read. Even if you're not a fan of the Turtles, this will make you one. Nice. So there you go. Go awesome. Read it. Love it.
Cool.
Cute.
I opened up my Ghost Rider comic and it was like I was teleported back to the 90s because there was this big ad for a Cable written by Jeff Loeb. I'm reading Ghost Rider. It's like, whoa, dude, did I get... Oh, no, it's okay. Oh, it's 2011. It's all right.
Great to God.
Jeff Loeb. Anyway, so I obviously am going to be talking about Ghost Rider, something that has been canceled.
So is this the last issue?
No, I don't think so. I don't know when it will be, though, because they've got the previews for the next issue, which features Hawkeye.
What issue is that?
This is issue 6.
I want to say I thought it was 8.
Yeah, that probably is about right. Considering production and stuff, that sounds about right. So, so this issue, there's a couple of things that are going on, as well as, I mean, a lot of these have ended up being very self-contained stories, which is disappointing and good, I guess. You know, in some sense, I'd like to have like a big overarching story, but on the other hand, considering it's going to be canceled, I hate to have loose ends.
Mm.
So there's discussion about, you know, the force of a hurricane, and there's, I guess, a hurricane that's coming to Louisiana, which is where Zarathos is drawn Alejandra.
And so she's sort of in like the swamps, and there's an old woman guarding a what looks to be some sort of barrier and then an island, and you walk on alligators. So it's kind of awesome.
Nice.
But when she crosses the barrier, she gets separated from Zarathos, almost gets eaten by an alligator, until some old guy pulls her up on the island. And there's a bunch of weird looking people on this island. And this guy, Earl, tells her that they, you know, had all been killers at one point, but they came here and were redeemed. And now they just live a peaceful life. And then from there, it gets wacky because all the guys join into a big legion thing and try to kill her.
A legion thing, huh?
Yeah. Like, you know, imagine what a creature made out of 50 people would look like. Yeah. So, all sort of, like, mashed and lumped together. And, because what you find out is basically this old witch had put up a, like, protection spell, and anybody that was a murderer was drawn to this island, and then they were told, well, if you kill someone, then you can leave. But they would hack each other to bits, and then the next morning they would get up and everybody would be fine, so it's like Groundhog Day.
No.
But they wouldn't get to leave. And so they eventually just accepted their fate, but now they figured out since this girl is here, if they kill her, then they can leave. So that's why they're trying to kill Alejandra. But she manages to chase it outside of the barrier and then lays some justice on them and burns them to fiery hell. Of which the only... And it, I guess, kills off the old woman as well. So the only person left is Earl. And Earl had mentioned earlier in the story that he had... the reason he was there is he had killed his whole family. And so he's like, okay, you know, we're free, I'm alive. And she's like, you murdered your family, Earl. And she fucking kills him. But it's an interesting, and then that's the end. But it's an interesting story because it talks about, like, forces of nature, and it links, like, the hurricane to that, and talks about how Zarathos is much like a force of nature, and she's just sort of letting Zarathos, you know, lead her on this path, and maybe there really isn't. Maybe there's redemption, maybe there isn't, but there's just this, you know, this force, and that, you know, you maybe you can't escape your past. You know, you'll have to face judgment. I think it's really interesting. I like the themes that it's pulling on because, I mean, again, you know, Ghost Rider being a sort of supernatural story, I like that it's going to, that when it plays on those elements of salvation, redemption, and also justice and punishment. And, you know, this version of Zarathos harkens back to some earlier versions, which, you know, I think people like to think Ghost Rider is badass, but for a lot of, like, the Ghost Rider that I read, in particular, like Dan Ketch and stuff, there was always, like, an element of, like, mercy. And this... there's not as much mercy here. You know, there hasn't been that much mercy with this version of Ghost Rider anyway. You know, there's a lot of meeting out justice without any kind of
temperance. Well, Danny wasn't the host for Zarathos, was he?
No, well, I guess not. Yeah, and that gets
Ghost Rider
into a whole...
knowledge is a blank, something of a blank spot for me, but...
Yeah, his was a... They tried to go into this different thing where his was a different... thing where it was like a spirit that had been passed down or something.
Yeah, it was an actual, it was a spirit of vengeance.
Right. Yeah. And so...
But that wasn't it, the idea was that, right, that he was part of a bloodline.
Right.
Cursed by Mephisto to always become the Ghost Rider, Mephisto's agent.
Right.
And turned out Danny Ketch and John Blaze were brothers.
Right.
They'd been separated to protect them from the curse. But Danny was the one who was always going to fall victim to the curse. But Mephisto, in his devilish way, instead of... He made it so that Johnny would become a Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And bound him to Zarathos to create that. But all of this has sort of become very muddled now.
Yeah, it's not only that. Yeah, and it's one of those...
Spider equals Zarathos, and he's a spirit of vengeance. Apparently, Daniel Way decided Zarathos was actually an angel because he was a spirit of vengeance and retribution and not rage, even though Zarathos was not a spirit of vengeance, and that was Danny and not Zarathos, not Johnny.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I think that it's better that that gets muddled and, like, forgotten about. Because I think the story, I think for the, I mean, I don't know. I think it's that kind of baggage that when you come to Ghost Rider, you kind of go, eh? You know, it's like, I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But yes, you are right. Danny's was not Zarathos.
And the whole spirit of vengeance thing is good stuff, but you can't really link it to Zarathos without farting in the face of all of the history.
Yeah.
You look at the film where he just became Ghost Rider and they just left it at that, you know? They didn't bother talking about spirits possessing him or whatever.
Well, that's more of a second movie anyway.
Yeah, it's called Spirit of Vengeance. Let's see what they do.
Yeah. But you know, even at that, getting back into, you know, more of a Zarathos centric, you know, comic, and talking about the function and aspects of Zarathos, I think is interesting, especially the Alejandra is, you know, a lot of times there was this battle between, especially be it Don, you know, Dan or Johnny, they were really battling Zarathos a lot. You know, it was a lot about struggling for control and struggling for dominance, and this is much more of a symbiotic relationship that Alejandra is really trying to not necessarily follow Zarathos completely, but see where, you know, it's like she's seeing where it goes. You know, she's really trying to let it work out, let it try and feel its way out. I mean in something like this character spent her whole life being raised to be Ghost Rider, which is something really different. I mean, we've seen Johnny and Dan sort of came upon it, you know, fish out of water out of nowhere, but she was really raised to become Ghost Rider. And so she's got a very different approach to it. You know, it doesn't mean that she's got full control of her powers and that she really knows what she's in for. But it's certainly a different approach than I've seen, and it's letting the comic go into some interesting directions for the next two issues. But anyway, I like it. I mean, so far I've enjoyed it, and I think that I wish it would get more of an opportunity to grow. I think it's growing with each issue. Obviously, it's not, so I can just go home and cry in my Wheaties. But anyway, I think it's good. I think it's worth a read. Check it out. I mean, like I said, your mileage may vary, but I'm at least enjoying it. So, sorry.
It's sad that you're enjoying it and you know it's getting canceled.
I know, isn't it? Doesn't that suck?
Yeah, I'm thankful that there is not a single book yet that's happened to for me.
Well, lately. I mean, I'm...
Yeah.
Lately,
Hurt,
yeah, well, I mean...
Hurt got canceled.
I mean,
canceled.
I lost Victor Von Doom and Destroyers, but that was before they came out, so I didn't...
You were reading Hurt for a while.
I didn't get a taste. Yeah, but I was going to drop Hurt, and then I decided I'd just stick it out to the end.
And you've had that happen before, though. I mean, you know that that's happened to other stuff you've read, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. Surely. He's really trying to think about it.
I'm thinking, but... Well, Runaways.
Yeah.
That wasn't
Secret
officially
Six.
Canceled, though. That was just...
Secret Six?
Yeah, Secret
Six. Way,
yeah.
It is kind of feeling that way.
It's kind of hard to think of that as canceled, but... Because it's the
it
circumstances.
It was, though. I mean,
it's kind of hard not to think of it that way now, though.
I'm just thinking of things that like had the legs cut out from under them because they weren't doing well, you know, where Secret Six was canceled for other more... wide reasons. The only example I can really think of is John Ostrander's Heroes for Hire from the late 90s that jumps out at me as something that I was like, ah, fuck. I was annoyed that was pulled out from under me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of a major example. Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, all right. Well,
I'm sorry, JD.
It's okay. No one else is reading it, so.
Yes, you're the one guy.
In general. I mean, no one else is reading it. Like me... And, like, five other people, you know.
Well, I, when I first heard about them getting a new ghostwriter, especially being a female one, I kind of wanted to read it. And then for some reason, I just totally forgot about it. So
yeah.
Did everybody else.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's not like Marvel spent a lot of press on this, you know.
So. That's probably the reason, because I didn't see a whole lot of advertising for it.
But I think, and we talked about it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and I think you're right, Chris. I think it's just, you know, there really isn't an audience for it, you know, ghostwriters.
Well, I would also say it definitely got lost in the Fear Itself shovel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't generally tend to read a thing and go, oh, crossovers killed that, or whatever. Like, some people are doing that for Herc. I don't really buy that. Herc didn't start out with a crossover. It actively wanted to be part of Spider Island, and it really didn't tie in with Fear Itself very tightly at all. But Ghost Rider launched with Fear Itself, and there was just so much Fear Itself stuff. I think Ghost Rider did get lost in that.
She's especially young enough. She ought to go to the Academy. That would be...
Oh, well, you never know.
That would be kind of fun. Zarathos in Avengers Academy? That could be bad. Lots of people with evil pasts, and she's sort of vengeance. And yeah, that would be bad. Never mind. Don't do that. No. So anyway, all right. Chris, on to you, sir.
Okay, well, I just didn't really read anything that was particularly world setty on fiery this week. You know, I picked up the Avengers Origins Thor one shot because it's written by Catherine Immerman, and it's okay. It's nothing too special. Ultimates continues to be entertaining. The last issue of Herc came out and just sort of reminded me why I was dropping it, to be honest. Red Skull Incarnate, the final issue of the Red Skull miniseries, which we talked about the first issue back when it came out a couple of months ago, haven't talked about it again since. That's wrapped up this week and continues to be just as nasty and as unpleasant as the first one was. We'll talk about a few of the other things I have later on at the end of the show, but Daredevil by Wade also continues to be really great. Really great use of the comic medium in this one again, just as with Marcos Martin. There's a really great page turn moment in this where you think one thing is going to happen and then you turn it and it's a double page splash. It's something else entirely. Oh. Very good. But yeah, so what I'm actually going to talk about is I read two graphic novels this morning. And they were good. Well, I'm going to talk about them. Yeah. The first one is Fantastic Four 1234, which is by Grant Morrison and Jim Lee. This is not new. The original Fantastic Four 1234 miniseries came out in, checking the indicia, 2001, across 2001 and 2002. So good long time ago, back when Marvel had Morrison. And it is a four-issue deconstruction of the Fantastic Four. It's a hot and humid couple of days in New York City. The Fantastic Four are on edge. There's no villains about. Nothing's going on. And that Reed Richards has himself locked up in his in-deep thought, do not disturb room. The Thing's losing his temper. The Human Torch is bored. And Sue Storm's feeling ignored. And that's when Dr. Doom strikes. I thought that every issue was going to be something of an examination of one member of the four each, but besides a very Thing-centric first issue, and maybe like the Invisible Woman's the subject of about half the second issue, it isn't really. But the basic idea is that Doom preys upon the individual feelings, character feelings and personality feelings of the members of the four to take them out one at a time. He entices the Thing with the possibility of a cure and sends him through his time machine in order to turn him back into the human he was before, but all his memories go with it. You know, he recruits Namor to seduce the Invisible Woman when she's at her emotionally weakest. The Mole Man is promised Alicia Masters if he can take the Human Torch away and trap him in the dank caverns of the earth where his flame will gutter and die. And all the while, Mr. Fantastic's locked away thinking. But without dropping any major spoilers as to the plot, it's kind of like... I mean, I basically decided to read it because it was Morrison, and I didn't used to have a great appreciation of Morrison, but I've developed it over, like, the last year or so, when I had that revelatory moment of understanding regarding his Batman and the genuine quality of his action comics. This is kind of, for Fantastic Four, like what All-Star Superman was for Superman. It, you know, it takes as its starting place a study of the Fantastic Four's failings, which was their defining factor. You know, that's what made the Fantastic Four great. That's what made them different from superheroes of their times. That's what made the Marvel Universe stand out when it was born. It was these heroes who had problems and fought amongst each other and were like real people. And so the idea is that Dr. Doom preys upon those. And he does so by bringing out, like, the top three Fantastic Four baddies of all time, really. Dr. Doom, the Submariner, even though the Submariner is not really a bad guy anymore, but, you know, when he's doing a sort of showcase, everybody, you gotta have the Submariner in there. These are, like, some of their earliest villains from the first four issues of Fantastic Four. Take away the Skrulls and the Miracle Man, and you have the villains from the first five issues of Fantastic Four here. But the central conceit of the climax really is that while those character flaws were what made them stand out originally, they are more than their flaws. The strength of the Fantastic Four and what makes the Fantastic Four great is their ability to overcome those flaws. And this is what a small and petty man like Doom fails to comprehend. And this is why his plan fails, you know. I mean, it also involves a giant Doom robot attacking the Baxter Bell tank, so you can't really go wrong there. But it takes these strong character-based ideas, and it also blends it with Morrison's higher and increasingly higher and higher level concepts where, you know, Reed realizes Dr. Doom gets a hold of a machine that allows him to essentially rewrite not reality so much, but to move people around reality as if on a chessboard and allow all of these things to happen in accordance with his vision, to and the belief that he can play these characters using their feelings, whereas Reed senses it happening and locks himself away to think of a solution. And he realizes that all he has to do is stretch his consciousness and grow new brain structures in order to outplay Dr. Doom. So, you know, it's two higher level consciousnesses battling on a different playing field by the end of the thing. But as I say, the real heart of it is that the Fantastic Four are more than their weaknesses. You know, it's a real celebration in a dark way, because it's art's by Jay Lee on this, so I suppose listeners of this show will probably know best as the artist for Dreamwave's World War II Transformers G.I. Joe crossover. Marvel readers probably know him best as an artist on Submariner in the 90s. So it is quite a shadowy, dark, heavily inked storyline, you know. But as well, you know, it's the Fantastic Four, as I said, they're more than their weaknesses, and they are a unit together. The Fantastic Four, it's just, you know, everybody always calls them the first family, and they are, you know, because they are a family, they're a unit. It's a study of what makes the Fantastic Four unique. They're not the Avengers, they're not the X-Men, you know, they're not the two other big teams in the Marvel Universe. Members can't come and go and change. There have been times when Luke Cage has stepped in, or the She-Hulk has stepped in, or Crystal and Medusa may have swapped in briefly, but it always comes back to the Four. They can't change. They are a unit, and together they are more than themselves, and it's a celebration of that fact. And Reed sums it up here: my family are an equation. Alter one part of the equation and it no longer tells the truth. We're a beautiful, perfect emotional molecule turning in mathematical space. Beautiful way Reed can find. And you know, when Reed is describing his family as perfect maths, you know, that's the only way Reed can actually express his true love and understanding of the people around him. And it, you know, it's just a glorification of that, and a defiance of the bitterness and the solitude that Dr. Doom represents, a man who has shut himself away from reality and tries to manipulate people versus a team of people who are truly, you know, one unit together, inseparable. And it is to the Fantastic Four what All-Star Superman was to Superman, as far as I'm concerned, and recommended reading. Also contains, as a sort of backup strip, a short Nick Fury story, which has nothing else to do with anything that's in there, but which is purely included because it was the only other short Marvel Knights story that Grant Morrison wrote.
This sounds like a really good starter series for someone who doesn't know.
I'm not 100% sure. Like I say with with All-Star Superman, I don't know if I recommend All-Star Superman to somebody who's just looking to start out on Superman.
The thing is, everyone knows Superman. Everyone knows his story.
Well, yeah, but everybody knows the basic tenets of Superman. I don't think a lot of people today who understand that have an appreciation for the wacky Silver Age spacefaring Superman. But we talked about this when we reviewed the All-Star Superman cartoon earlier this year. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there that'll come off as very strange to somebody who doesn't really know that was a Superman thing, you know? And while, you know, Fantastic Four plays it, doesn't go nearly as far. You know, there's really only one high concept crazy Imaginati Explorer type thing in this. I'm still not sure that it's a great intro to the Fantastic Four. I'm not 100% sure about that, but you know, if anybody has any passing, at the same time, like, it doesn't require any particularly in-depth knowledge or understanding of the strange foibles of their long history, the way I think All-Star Superman sometimes does. If you have knowledge of the Fantastic Four, be it that goes maybe beyond the films, I think anybody can pretty much read that, and I would recommend that they do.
How much does that cost?
That is a hardback, and it is $20. $20. It wasn't available in paperback. Yeah, it was only 4 issues, but it's not too bad for a hardback, as you say. Plus, it's got the Nick Fury story in there. It was available in paperback a couple of years ago, but it's been out of print for a while, so they brought it out as a nice hardback now that Grant Morrison's stock is up, basically, I think. Isn't it with hardback? And the other thing I read this morning as well, which I've been looking forward to reading for a while, is a book that's called Gingerbread Girl by Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. This is published by Top Shelf Productions.
Oh, so this isn't the Stephen King one, huh?
No, this is something else I didn't know until recently I learned. Gingerbread Girl. This was originally serialized online, so I think you can find it online to read if you want to, and I would recommend it, as we will now talk about. But the paperback's only $12.95. And it's longer than FF, you know. So, it's a book I picked up basically because I have always liked. It's written by Paul Tobin and it's art by Colleen Coover, and that's two creators whose works I've always liked what little I've seen of and have wanted to read more by them. Paul Tobin wrote a lot of Marvel's adventures, all ages stuff, and I guess most widespread, most recently, he'd be known as the guy who was doing Spider-Girl. And Colleen Coover, I couldn't really point to any one thing she's done consistently. She just sort of pops up here and there. She did sections in Girl Comics. She did backup strips in X-Men First Class for a long time. But she has a very simplified, kinetic, almost Archie sort of style newspaper strip look to it. But don't let that belie the innocence, you know, because she's also known for drawing erotic comics. It's not, you know, the innocence of the artwork in this belies a lot of the emotional content. There's no better way to sum up the plot than just by reading off the back of the book, so I'll just do that right now. Ah-ha-ham! Narrator voice is coming up. There are a myriad of verifiable facts concerning 26-year-old Anna Billups. She likes sushi and mountains and piglets, but hates paper cuts and beer breath. She flirts with girls and boys and loves to travel. She might have a missing sister, or she might be totally insane. Did Anna invent an imaginary sister named Ginger during her parents' traumatic divorce, or did her mad scientist father extract part of her brain and transform it into a living twin? In this whimsical, thought-provoking graphic novel, a host of narrators, including boyfriends, girlfriends, neighbors, bystanders, magicians, and passing animals, try their best to unlock the mystery of Anna and the Gingerbread Girl.
Right.
Yes, because it's a total fourth wall breaker. It is narrated by everybody from the central figure, Anna herself, at the very start, through her lovers, people she walks past on the street, people who decide to insert themselves into the narrative for the purposes of speeding the narrative along or to explain some of the scientific concepts behind it. And on two separate occasions, a pigeon picks up the narrative because the characters leave one area and the pigeon has to fly across town to get you, the reader, to where the characters have moved themselves to so that the story can follow on. A bulldog also takes up the narrative at one point. British bulldog. Good evening. First, before I begin, a question. It's just a bulldog saunters across town and leads you back to the characters. But it's not... It's rather hard to describe without going into it in too much detail, which I simply don't want to. But Anna believes and tells everybody that her father was a mad scientist who extracted what is called the... Penfield homunculus from her brain, which is a real life, that is actually a real life part of your brain, the part of your brain that registers touch, sensation, the sensation of touch. And somehow in his lab transformed it into a twin sister, for her who feels what she feels. And that's when Sister is now missing and lost to the world. But it's set in Portland, Oregon. And Anna believes Ginger is somewhere in Portland and would like to find her. Now, it is perhaps no coincidence that at exactly the time that Anna claims this happened, that her parents had a violent and messy divorce. So the question is, did she just invent a sister on which to, which she could believe that, well, on which she could project all her feelings and could believe they were happening to somebody else? Or did this really happen? You know, we get third-person accounts from the various characters who carry the narrative. Primarily, her girlfriend, Chili, and her boyfriend, Jerry. She's bisexual. But she doesn't like the label because modern culture reflects poorly upon it. And the storyline just follows the narrative of her and Chili out on a date from art galleries, walking through the streets to shops, as all these little facts are given and random characters that they pass on the street are people who feel the need to explain some of the crazy things that she is saying, you know. And she resents being referred to as crazy, so it leads to some confrontations. And for all of the wild ideas that are in it, it is a very... As I say, the innocence of the art like belies the emotional content of some of the things. And I can't go too deep into what actually happens in it because it just ruins it for the climax, you know, so I can't tell you too much. But it is a book about accepting who you are and other people being willing to accept that aspect of you. It throws you a couple of curveballs. There's a couple, you know, where Anna trips up a cashier to prevent her from stopping a shoplifter. And I figure she's done it for one reason because of what we've seen on previous pages, you know, but it's actually another reason entirely that's far more introverted that I didn't expect to be the reason. And it's a book that just sort of makes you think, as it describes it, it's whimsical and thought-provoking, and there's no other description I can give for it that is as solid as that one. It's unusual. And if you're going into it expecting a solid mystery with a beginning, middle, and an end, that's not what you're going to get. I must caution you of that. It is not designed to provide a concise tale that will solve all the mysteries of life and dealing with the problems of your past and your emotional coping mechanisms. It's just a story about one night in one person's life who has these issues and how she and the people around her deal with them and react to her. And it's called Gingerbread Girl, and I would strongly recommend it to anybody.
Nice. How much is that?
Nice.
That is only $12.95.
That's not bad.
But as I say, support it, buy it, absolutely recommend it. It's an odd shape. You know, it's about as wide as an ordinary graphic novel, but two-thirds as tall. It's kind of little pockets. Not pockets.
Sweet.
Pocket,
you mean I'll have to see if they have.
You know, you can read it online. So I think it's probably still up online, wherever it was that it was originally serialized, and you can read it there if you want to. But I recommend buying it.
Nice.
It's really nice. I don't know how this... I can't imagine this would have read nearly as well in page by... I don't know if it was page by page or a couple of pages ago or whatever, but just getting to sit down and read this from start to finish in one chunk it would be a superior reading experience as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, there's just some, you know, stories that work better graphic novel-wise than story by story.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The other graphic novel I read this week was Ozma of Oz, and that's one of Marvel's Oz books. And again, they are one that I always think reads best in graphic novel format. So I sat down for a couple of hours with that.
You were on something else talking about that. You were on Underbase. Yeah, you were on Underbase talking about that. Yeah,
I like, recommend all Oz books.
Sweet.
I really wanted to jump on that one, too.
Well, they're 8-issue miniseries. The first 3 volumes of the Oz series are out now. The 4th one's currently being serialized.
Nice.
Read them. Recommended.
Sweet. Okay.
This week.
So, that brings us to what I'm hoping will be a 2-part feature for the end of the show.
Because it's also random.
Because it's so random.
Because none of us read the same thing.
No crossover. I literally had 2 comics in a trade I bought this week. So, yeah. So let's start with Tiny Titans then.
Tiny Titans.
This is a...
This was so fun.
You know you were off to a good start when the first page, like the pre-issue one-panel cast page, has Robin, Beast Boy, and Cyborg looking up at the mysterious woman from the New 52. She walks by and goes, "Who's the lady in purple?
I have no clue, but I hope she's not in my continuity."
she makes her way many times throughout.
Oh, that's the funniest. She just saunters by in the background, and all the cast stop.
She's like practically right there in the front. Everything.
Sometimes it's the background, sometimes it's the foreground. But she just walks through a panel. Everybody stops what they're doing and goes,
"Like, who's that?"
Question marks ping up with their head, and then just go right back to whatever it was they were doing.
Oh, why did I not buy this?
You always command it. Now, we're not going to blow on this show because DC has reported it as news. Yeah, we find out who's under the cape. Now, DC reported and I give Tiny Titans a bigger push in the news this week because of this fact. So we're not going to blow
it. Oh, they reveal it?
Yeah, the cape comes off. Wonder Girl gets her in her jump rope.
Ooh, well, you'll have to tell me after the show then.
I'll tell you after the show. But the actual story of the issue is about how Robin is heading off on a mission with Batman, and he's got a replacement coming in. But Talon, who's the evil Robin from a parallel universe from like a couple of issues back where everybody dresses in bad purple and green colors, except he wears red and gray, is insistent that he should get to be the replacement. And it turns out that his replacement is the Protector. And that's a name that's going to mean nothing to nobody, but the Protector was a replacement character for Robin created for a Teen Titans anti-drug PSA comic because Robin was tied up in licensing with Super Friends at the time.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Wow. I just thought they totally made him up.
Oh, that's even cooler, you know. And so the continuity is flowing rich and fast in this issue, very deliberately, since continuity is a
thing. Now, wait, I got a question for you, McFeely, since you know about the Protector. Is he really the sidekick to the hot dog vendor?
Awesome.
Because they want to know who he's a sidekick to, because they're like, well, Robin's a sidekick, you're not a sidekick. He's like, yeah, but he pulls out a picture of a hot dog vendor.
He's not a superhero. Yeah, he is. Is hot dogs rock? And then Cyborg even makes reference back to the Teen Titans Little Archie where he won a burger eating contest with Jughead.
Oh my god.
So Talon tries to get... Talon goes to the Batcave and tries to get the bats and penguins who are all living there to kick the Protector out because they're worried. He tricks them into thinking Robin's going to take his place. And then the final part is about... revealing the identity of the mysterious purple woman, so we can't talk too deeply about that, but continuity is the gig. Like, Talon thinks that the Protector might be Robin because they have exactly the same hair.
That's another really good ending that with him at the end there.
Won't spoil the ending of that one either. Yeah, so we can't really say too much more than that because whenever the cape comes off, I laughed like a drain.
Let's
be honest. Well, it's not to spoil it to say it, but like, this is not going to be true for the mainstream DC.
No, but it's fun to know that they're playing along with the DC 52. So,
yeah. But the best thing is they're able to do this and make it funny without little children requiring to have read that Teen Titans anti-drug thing or to even know who the Purple Woman is, because the first page is like, who's that? I don't know. And then she drifts by like three times in the course of the comic. Everybody just goes, So the gag is entirely self-contained as well. But is it also at the same time, it does call back to like a bunch of issues ago in Tiny Titans when the concept of continuity came up before, and they were teaching kids what continuity was, and Cyborg had to get a lesson in continuity.
Oh my god.
And then it all factors back into this one as well. So we haven't talked about Tiny Titans on the show for a while, but that is one of the funniest issues of Tiny Titans in a while.
It was very well worth the read to see who is underneath it.
Go out and buy it, even if you don't normally. This one is one that will probably appeal.
Yeah, if you are, you know, a DC fan, this is a must, especially if you got into the whole new DC 52. Yeah, you gotta get this one just so you can laugh at the rest.
If you're really looking for something, you know, if you're somebody who's just got back into comics off the back of the New 52, or if you ventured over to DC and you're having trouble finding something that you'd like to give your kids, because, well, New 52, this is the book to look to.
Oh, the thing is, this is as fun for adults as it is kids, though.
You,
find yourself laughing once or twice.
I've been saying it for like 2 years now, but if there's joy in your heart, there's no way you could not.
Well, the thing is, it's actually this show and your reviews of Tiny Titans that actually made me pick this up, and I'm like, why was I reading this before? So
I like to feel I've touched people emotionally.
All right.
Many people, far and wide.
I should read that.
I'm tweeting that.
Maybe I should replace Ghost Rider with Tiny Titans. And is it...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. You got a gap in your thing now.
Right.
Yeah.
A gap in my thing.
Your pool. A gap in your pool.
A gap in my pool. Right. That's yeah. Anyway, so...
Make it dirty. It's not.
No. It was funnier that way. Anyway, so... FF is still around.
Yeah, this will just be our second half.
So this will be the second half of our two-part sort of review where Chris has read things that I...
that nobody had, only one other person
only
has.
Only one other person has that we might talk about. So, yeah. WoW new art.
The art on this is by Juan Bobillo, who I think people are really going to know as the artist of She-Hulk under Downslot.
Oh, okay.
Yes, he was the artist for the first volume, shared duties with Paul Pelletier, and he did bits of the second volume as well. And I developed a real appreciation for his art when he was on. I'd never seen him before, but I really came to associate his art very much with She-Hulk. He drew a very good sort of cartoony, sexy sort of She-Hulk. It was just really the right sort of way, cartoonish sort of sexy, fun style that... Like, not sexy, like, sexy, but, like, sexy, like a cartoon, but right. Not like a cartoon. it's really hard to describe, you know. She had all the right bumps in all the right places. But...
you know what? This is just coming after you just admitted that you like to touch people. She has the bumps in the right places.
Right.
Oh,
Keely, you are awesome this week.
Wow.
I am not on my game.
talking about that first, though, it's not, I guess, having read, you know, so much in like the previous style, this is really a style departure.
Oh.
Yeah. You know,
funny thing is that FF hasn't really even managed a consistent artist over its first year. I mean, Steve Epting is supposed to be the dude, and he did like the first arc, but Barry Kitson did a big chunk of the second half of the year. But he's quite close to Steve Epting, like stylistically,
right.
And you could tell him apart. But this followed the same like basic realistic style, and this is much more cartoony.
Yes, but not bad. And I'm not saying it's bad. Before we get too far, is there color issues? Was there a few color issues I noticed?
I feel like maybe some hairs were like. Well, this first page, you're probably really looking at this first panel of the kids, aren't you? Because there is like one tall kid too many, and I don't see Leech.
Well, that's what I'm saying is color problems. Is because if you look in the back.
There's a little guy. He's pink.
I think that's supposed to be Leech standing next to Franklin, and he's pink.
But is that... No, Franklin's in the front. You know,
but that's a whole... No, that's what I'm saying is another issue.
The other three tall humans should be Alex, Val, and Bentley.
Right.
But there are four tall people here. So one of them is presumably supposed to be Leech. Or Artie. And then the little guy is supposed to be Leech or Artie.
Either way, that's supposed to be Leech, and he's
purple.
That's
just a coloring issue, though. That's...
Yeah, that's an initial issue too, but I think that's supposed to be Leech and the colors wrong. But that pops up again.
I didn't catch it again, though, to be fair.
Well, there's like two Leeches, I think.
You sure you're not looking at the fish people now?
I'm pretty sure. Let me get to the page that I'm thinking of.
Because it's near the back, I think. Yes. Okay. The page where it's the panels at the top, and there's the dragon, and then the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And Nathaniel's on the far right.
Yeah.
Who's the pink thing?
That's Artie.
Okay, I don't know who. Why do I not know who Artie is?
I don't know. You're not paying attention, obviously.
Apparently not.
Artie's the one who casts holograms, but he lost his powers in M Day, so he's been casting holograms with a helmet.
Okay, that's why. No. It's the art style that's throwing me off too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different art style, and there's definitely, you know, there's one or two, definitely that first group shot. There's a cock up in there somewhere.
And him and Leech are drawn a lot alike, which is what's throwing me off.
They are
too.
Very physically alike, though. That's not really an artist. So, you know, somebody's missing. So there's a tall person has been substituted into this panel in place of Leech.
I'll put it this way. The change in art style has changed their look, and that has confused me. It's not that they don't look alike. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the change in art style has confused me. But yes, anyway.
Moving on anyway.
Moving on. That's terribly uninteresting.
Yes.
Terribly boring
for
to talk
this
about.
Non-visual medium.
Let's talk about the story, as it were. Not as it were, as a good. So go ahead. I'll let you.
Indeed. Know. Oh, well, following on from the events of Fantastic Four number 600, Valeria has translocated the top three floors
important
of the Baxter
detail.
Building. To, yes. As she says, into a snowy mountain somewhere. And it turns out, hey, they're at Uncle Doom's. So they just trek across the Balkans. And to Latveria, where Christoph and Doom and the Shackled Doom, that is, and the last remaining Reed Richards duplicate and Nathaniel are all gathered together following recent events in FF. And, you know, that's sort of about it as far as we want to go into details. You know, this is very much about putting the ducks in a row for this final storyline, All Hope Lies in Doom. We get some flashbacks to whenever Valeria and Nathaniel were scheming together in the past. We see Valeria building a lightsaber for Bentley, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And that's a particular thing that I want to talk about. We mentioned out of Fantastic Four 600 that there was this man of light that's been talking to
Franklin. Franklin, yeah.
Brain fart. And you had mentioned that it might be Da Vinci.
Michelangelo.
Or Michelangelo.
Well, I thought it was Michelangelo, but yeah, you're talking about the Vitruvian Man here.
Right. And that seems to be, because that seems to be a link here, I mean, in this childlike drawing.
I mean, even though they are completely different people, they do come from the same era, and they are both stars of S.H.I.E.L.D., and he is a glowing yellow figure in this child's illustration.
Well, I was more saying that, again, it links those. It's another link between this to S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm thinking it strengthens that possibility that you're right, that is what the link
could
is.
Be.
So anyway, it's interesting.
Still not sure really whether we're going to see that be part of this long game story that has been running since the start, or if that's really going to be. The analogy I've been using when I've been talking to people about it is that this story now, this two-part Forever in Fantastic Four and All Hope Lies in Doom here, this is basically Return of Bruce Wayne. In the grand Morrison's Batman long game analogy, this is Hickman's Return of Bruce Wayne and his final arc on Batman and Robin, two stories running side by side that will culminate in the end of all the themes that he has really put in play. And then I'm thinking, like, maybe this stuff that's going to happen with Franklin might be his Batman ink. Mm-hmm. The thing that comes after the end of all the real themes that he's put in play.
Yeah, because we really are, I mean, we're building to that point. We're getting to what's going to be coming after that. So, but I mean, you know, like I said, this is more of a piece of the puzzle than any kind of, I think, massive revelation. But,
yeah, they're just doing science.
Yes, although science. Although the thing that they've opened that they're opening up at the end is that's the gateway, isn't it, to the other
yes,
multiverse?
This is the gateway to take the other Reed back the bridge.
Is that where he wants to go, or is
yeah, he wants some... back to his. That was the whole point, was that they were going to do, they orchestrate the war to create Saul's anvil, whatever it was, to use something that existed on some kind of quantum curve between all four cities to, well, we never got rid of the details, but presumably split the world so that they could open up a portal that would allow them to go back to their home dimensions. And they're going about it in a much more direct method here.
Yeah.
But there's lots of, you know, fun, snippy kiddie interactions, which is like a lot of the fun that these kids have brought. And Valeria and Nathaniel. it's nice to get a flashback and see some of the things that they've been talking about, because they do run around acting awfully holier than thou, I know so much more, blah, blah, blah. So it's nice to see where that all started. And it's nice for Valeria to get caught off guard, and she lectures to Nathaniel before he really tells her what, you know, what is it, you know. He tells him that he really shouldn't keep dropping hints about the future. And he says, why is that? Because you could screw up everything. Temporal anomalies, cascading events, collapsing time stream. You know this. You're a time traveler. And then he tells her about how he sent the future Franklin back in time. What is that, like 2 years ago now? Brilliant. I just love how far back it goes, you know. And she just goes, oh, sniz. She's really caught off guard. I just really do actually like the way that Bobillo draws her as well in this scene. There's a couple of scenes, like sometimes it's the colorist and sometimes it's not, where she does have really pouty lips.
Yeah.
and thick eyelashes. But in this scene in particular, when she's building the lightsaber, like, she really looks like a child. And like, artists have struggled with Valeria. I mean, sometimes you just, whenever you have to have children actually doing adult things in comic books, your art can sometimes get away from you, I guess. Because the depth of the intellectual things that they have to be doing sort of just pull you in the wrong direction when you're trying to do body language or facial expressions or whatever. And yeah. But the simple teeny tininess of her when she's sitting in a little chair to make this lab, and she has to pull her feet up under her and sit up with her knees up on the chair so she can reach the table, you know. And she throws her arms wide as she lectures Nathaniel, and, you know, her head is as wide as her torso, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Her proportion. I just really like the way she looked in that scene.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I say I think the art style lends into that.
I keep coming
that.
Back to the art, yeah.
With this being the kid's story, I mean, do we know, is this going to, I mean, are they talking about keeping, like, a separate, like, FF
yeah,
story?
Yeah, the plan going? Is that this is going to be, after everything wraps up, that it's really going to be about exploring the other corners of the Fantastic Four universe that he hasn't really played in too thoroughly yet. Offhand, I don't know what's left, because really when you step back and look at the scope of everything Hickman's done, short of Skrulls, because Secret Invasion happened, short of Skrulls, he has really done a sort of greatest hits for the length of his run. You know, we've had the Inhumans, we've had the Black Panthers popped up a little in there, we've got Galactus, we got the Silver Surfer, we got Doctor Doom, we got the Mole Man, we got the Negative Zone, we got the Kree, everybody, you know, it's been a real series-wide greatest hits. Everything that makes the Fantastic Four what they are. So, what Mad Thinker, Doctor Doom, Mad Thinker, Diablo, Wizard, I think short of maybe the Puppet Master, who I would love to see him do a take on. I would love to see Hickman's take on the Puppet Master, and he is like maybe the one memorable Fantastic Four body who hasn't been in his run yet. So, yeah, get on that. I would be up for that, following on from whatever happens here at the end.
Or maybe, like I said, if the next arc goes into stuff with S.H.I.E.L.D., we may see, you know, an all-new connection with that or something else.
There's the possibility there. I don't know if he wants to go too far with it or not, because, I mean, we really don't know what's going to happen with S.H.I.E.L.D. yet. It doesn't look like it's going to be renewed for anything else, what with the new hard-nosed stance on sales, but yeah. It very much feels like it's wrapping up. Its story is ending with its second volume anyway. It feels like it's moving into a conclusion phase now. It's been ages since the last issue of that. I think we're due another issue of that this month.
Yeah.
And the connections between it and Secret Warriors never got too thick. Just enough to say, these exist, here we are. And yeah, we'll see if it factors into closely. I mean, my Michelangelo hypothesis might just be completely off the wall. Might be wrong.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So I don't know. I'm excited. I'm interested. And especially with Fantastic Four. So we've got, and we had teases in the end for Fantastic Four 601. Mm-hmm. The end of December and FF13.
Does it look like it's a good one? 601?
Well, I mean, it's got the thing on it, so, I mean, yeah. I don't know what else you want. I mean, that's pretty much,
you know. That's sold!
That's sold. It's like a license to print money. There you go. So, awesome. So, there you go. That's it. That's this week. 5-week month. Man, I hate these. It's just grueling.
Well, the thing is, there was no new movies that came out this week. There was hardly any new comics that came out this week. It's just like, this would have been a perfect week for someone to introduce something, you know, big. But yeah. No, everyone went on vacation.
Yeah, well, and it's getting into the holidays and, you know, people busy with stuff, I guess. But anyway, but we're here.
Yeah, we'll still bring you Fanboy Versus.
That's right. Every week. Most weeks.
Except for on Christmas Day. I don't know. Are we still doing it on Christmas Day?
Oh, yeah. That is on Christmas Day, isn't it? Oh, maybe we'll have to do a Boxing Day show or something.
Yeah.
Then
we'll talk
then
about
New Year's Day the next week.
Yeah.
Might be a little gap. That'll give us time to think up our answers for a best of 2011.
I know. Yeah, we do have best of 2011. January.
You guys already know my answer.
So
reviewed it.
There was a lot of good stuff this year. That's actually going to be really interesting. So,
and then we're coming up on our second birthday.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we've got
my first anniversary.
We're closing in on our 100th episode. Not too long.
What is this week?
This is 82. So, I mean, it's going to be another. Well, I guess it'll be
three or four or five months. Yeah,
it'll be another like couple in months. March.
So, yeah. So
celebrate on St. Patrick's Day.
We're gonna have a busy first quarter.
We have.
Yeah.
We want to mention. It looks like we have a bunch of Justin TV followers that showed up. So, welcome to all of you. So I'll mention again, as I like to do, that we do this show live every week, 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT time. So join us live at tfradio.net/live. Again, that's the website as well, tfradio.net or fanboyversus.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at fanboyvs. We usually tweet about what we're talking about on the show, what's coming up.
I failed today.
I think Chris may have done a few things. So
yeah.
But we.
What did I do?
Did you tweeted at least from your Twitter?
Oh yeah, I did a couple of things there. Some things. I did a couple, not a whole lot. Our Twitter.
Yeah. So, for regular TF Radio news, I will mention that we are sorry that we didn't do a show this week. Life happened.
Shock.
So
why did that happen?
It was so weird. It was just one of those things where it's like last minute. It's just like
you didn't have
a few
me
of us.
Handy.
I know we didn't have you handy. No one was handy to do the recording for the show.
Chris McFeely is the glue that binds us.
Yes.
Except when I have to work the next day.
Except when he's got to, like, you know, hot comics the next day and can't be there. So anyway. So that's it. That's the show. Again, thanks so much for joining us. Again, it's nice to see some Justin TV chat there. That's usually
shout out to the Justin TV guys. Yeah. That never normally happens.
Please.
Hope you guys come back in the future.
Definitely.
I don't know. Let us know how you heard about the show or whatever. Yeah. If you've just stumbled into it, do let us know, because it's nice to see we're getting more people listening in.
Yeah, I like having new people from, you know, and yes, especially from Justin. It's so exciting. So, and again, go to the website, fanboyversus.com. You've got a whole archive there of episodes going back, 81. So I know someone asked about Avengers. We've talked about Avengers on this show, so there's an archive show for that. Search that. And we're be talking about that a lot as we get closer.
And when
to
it
movie.
Comes back up, when yep. the new TV show comes back
and
up.
And we don't always talk comics. You know, we do reviews of new TV shows and films and direct-to-DVD things and things like that. So we do try to broaden it out sometimes.
Yeah, when there's and stuff to we talk do. About. So.
You can be guaranteed as soon as Avengers movie comes out, we'll probably talk a whole hour about it.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be a show.
Heck, yes. We got to do a commentary of that. You know, TF Radio, they do the Transformers commentaries. We should do some comic movie commentaries. Yeah,
Thor, Captain America finally coming out tomorrow on DVD. Ooh, over here.
We should do that.
Oh, that's right. It's been out for a while here.
We should do that. Some
yeah,
extra
but I'm
content.
Putting it on my Christmas list. Like,
ah.
I think we should do a commentary on Green Lantern.
Ooh.
You're only saying that because of some of the chat that's going on Twitter tonight.
I like Green Lantern, and I'm finally found someone else that likes it.
I don't
what,
think...
What, one person? You found
two,
one?
Actually.
Two people? Like two it. People yes. like that movie besides you? That makes total three? Wow.
They were paid to see it.
Someone in Justin TV said they liked it, so there you go. So,
oh, there's four, number four.
So there's four people. So
that's why we shouldn't do a commentary, because we're just gonna get hate mail.
I know, we're just we'll
get even though all the money and all the reviews actually support our belief.
That's just gonna be.
I like it.
JD, you did see it, right?
Yes, I finally saw.
That's right, you did see it. Yeah, yes. I forgot. You remember?
I've seen everything now. I saw Captain America. I saw.
Yay!
What
did you see, Cap?
A couple weeks ago, it was good.
Yeah,
it was very good. I really liked Captain America. I thought they did a great job of. You know, sort of bridging that gap between the golden age, you know, sort of vision of Cap, and then slowly bringing that up to what would be considered a modern Captain America, even though the story was set in World War II. So I thought it was really interesting to see him, like, kind of run the gamut all the way, even though it was still in the past. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
As excited as I was for Thor, and much as I love Thor, and as much as it just, like, the Avengers hype, definitely, you know, just get me really excited for Thor and Cap. Thus far, in retrospect, I have to rewatch Cap when I get it on DVD, but looking back on him, I think X-Men First Class is taking it for the year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a... Yeah. We'll have to talk... That'll have to be a subcategory for our year interview, is the
yeah,
comics
that's,
as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's definitely a strong contender is going to be First Class. I've watched that several times, and it just does not get boring to me. I find new stuff when I watch it. I really enjoy it. So,
I've only watched it the one time since I got it on a DVD, but I was looking at it today and I was like, I don't rewatch this.
Let's do that. I'll come up with a list and we'll put it out there for the listeners as well.
Yeah, you get some input from the listeners on their best of 2011s as well.
Yeah, for
TFRadio.net,
graphic, you know, art, story, all that. So anyway, we're going to get out of here though. So, hey, again, check us out. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Justin again. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.